Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 9:30 in 716.
One of his wives was detained over the summer, as was one of his couriers. They provided information that ultimately led to the groundwork that pinpointed where Baghdadi was in northwestern Syria.
The death of a key terrorist, but not necessarily the death of ISIS.
ISIS as an organization, as a group, hasn't really been all that alarming. It's more the ideology that it inspires.
The ideology that, you know, God is telling you to be violent in his name is going to go on for a very, very long time. It's going to take a generation to change.
I'm Tim Wenger on 930 and 716. The death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi isn't expected to bring an end to the U.S. military's campaign against Islamic State militants. President Donald Trump announcing Sunday that a strike on al-Baghdadi's hideout in Syria had killed the elusive leader. But those who study extremism say the jihadist message is likely to live on and that his followers remain a threat in Iraq, Afghanistan, and beyond.
Recently, about maybe 3 to 4 weeks ago, the U.S. had really good intelligence that they knew where Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was, that he was in the northwestern Syria in a village, in a compound.
In depth, we go with a couple of correspondents covering the takedown, beginning with Luis Martinez at the Pentagon with Susan Rose and Brian Mazurowski.
And what we know is that the Delta Force, which is the elite Army unit, everybody knows about the SEAL Team 6, but the Army also has Delta Force, and they're responsible for actions in Syria. They started rehearsing what they would do to kind of break into that compound. And then last Thursday and Friday, President Trump was presented with that option, and he approved it, and then the raid took place. So very complicated, a lot of good work in terms of the intelligence flow coming in both the U.S. and by the Iraqis and the Kurds is what we're hearing.
Louis, now with U.S. forces kind of pulling out of Syria, how is that going to affect intelligence going forward and this continued threat from ISIS?
You know, it would appear that there might be an intelligence strain, if you will, because one of the best things that you can ever have is eyes on the ground. And information like that comes, let's say, in the form of tips, your neighbors, your people that you're working closely with, in this case, maybe Kurdish intelligence. They may have picked up information that may have proved useful for this raid. But in this case, what we're hearing is that it was actually out of Iraq, the information flow that kind of helped track down Baghdadi. One of his wives was detained over the summer, as was one of his couriers. They provided information that ultimately led to the groundwork that pinpointed where Baghdadi was in northwestern Syria.
Where does ISIS go from here? Because it seems like over the course of a few years, it's somewhat morphed from being led by al-Baghdadi to something that's more, I don't know, informal. People are inspired by it without being directly led.
Yeah, that's the thing, Brian, with this organization. It started off as an insurgency, then it became a terrorist group, and then they started grabbing territory. We saw the large areas of territory that they controlled in Syria and Iraq, and then we saw the brutality that they had during their so-called the caliphate. With the elimination of those territorial gains earlier this year, they resumed to becoming an insurgency. But throughout all that time, one of the things that had happened was that they were continued to sponsor overseas terror attacks. We saw the organized actions that they saw that they created in Paris and in France. But here in the United States, it's been more about the inspiration. ISIS was heavily organized on the social media front, and they were able to inspire people who maybe wanted to commit acts like these around the world. Here in the United States, we call them lone wolves. They were the ones that would get inspiration from social media over the internet, and then they would go out and commit these kinds of acts. So it's possible that in the future we may see ISIS once again returning to that, but for now it seems that they're going to be an insurgent group inside of Syria and definitely inside of Iraq.
Well, the U.S. had been tracking him. The U.S. military and intelligence sources had been tracking al-Baghdadi and apparently had been on to where he was.
Aaron Katursky also covering the complex ISIS leader takedown for ABC.
The raid that led to his death was accelerated after President Trump announced a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria. So the mission went on Saturday and then unfolded over several hours' time, tracking Baghdadi to a compound in northwestern Syria that was leveled when he blew up a suicide vest as U.S. commandos were closing in.
So the question now is, what is to become of what's left of ISIS?
And Susan, I think that's the question that's on the minds of federal law enforcement officials in this country, because at this point, ISIS as an organization, as a group, hasn't really been all that alarming. It's more the ideology that it inspires. And the feds have about 1,000 open cases in every state in the country involving some kind of plot or thought actual, you know, attack that is ISIS inspired. And that's far more dangerous than al-Baghdadi, you know, alive, dead. It's almost irrelevant.
Yeah, it seems that way, that ISIS is kind of morphed from something that was, you know, originally maybe led by him to something that's more of an idea than it is a formal group.
And we saw that with al-Qaeda as well. I mean, it has been a long time since al-Qaeda was thought capable of doing anything like 9/11 again. But as an idea, and symbolically, that's where it's been most dangerous in subsequent years. And I think the same is true for ISIS. The playbook is online. We've had too many examples in this country of people following it or taking inspiration from it, and that continues. Now, we know of no specific threat or plot, but we never do in advance, and so the authorities are on high alert.
Now, the intricacies of it all, the military theater that played out.
One of the things that I think civilians and military people, the difference between the two is that, you know your job, you know the people, you know the equipment. You just need someone to give you the ability to say, I believe in you, go ahead and do it in the military. That's really the main difference between civilians and folks in uniform.
Our own David Bellavia, Medal of Honor recipient, with the backstory.
And this is one of those things where if it's in Africa, if it's in Asia, wherever it is, we know our guys, we know our assets, we know how far it is. You just tell us if you'll allow it, and we'll do it. But this is a very brazen. Think about how far apart those logistical supply lines are spread. Anyone gets hurt, any damage to that equipment, you've got to literally go into a foreign country. You have to make tough decisions like the Bin Laden raid. Do you blow up the helicopter? Do you set it afire? What do you do? Luckily, with these Army guys, there were no hiccups. No one got hurt. One dog.
Yeah, I'm thinking to the experience most people would have, something to relate this to, and that would be the Bin Laden raid, right? And like Zero Dark 30, and watching that play out where it seems like, you know, it's kind of going on for years and years, gathering information, then all of a sudden it's, you know, one or two things where it just gets kicked into high gear and you're able to say, hey, we have this guy, we know he's here, and we think we can do this.
You know, one of the things that we're going to find out more information about this raid over time, and I'm sure, you know, there'll be a whole bunch of information that's out there for us to dig through. But at this level of the information that we know now, it appears that, you know, that President Trump's withdrawal from Syria put a decision-making processes into leadership at ISIS, and these guys were either reckless or deciding to move, or in a way the Kurds in that area were trying to curry favor with the American government because intelligence was available that would not have been available had the Americans not pulled out. So in a weird way, you can make the argument that this raid and this attack was able to happen because of the decisions of the Trump administration. It's almost crazy to think about it in terms like that, but either this guy made a phone call he shouldn't have made, or someone trying to get to you know, with an intention to get favor with the Trump administration, turned over evidence and maybe went for that $25 million bounty.
David, it was Delta Force, an elite Army unit, that did this. These are your brothers, right?
Well, you know, brothers, I don't know if I can even say I'm part of that family. Delta Force, these guys are so elite and so at a skill level so far above what I trained at as a normal infantryman. Just to put it in perspective, you know, you're talking about a high school football player going up to, you know, Josh Allen and John Brown at New Era Field. I mean, the level of repetition and training that these guys have, it's at a completely different level. And the other thing is, we're also talking about Rangers. You know, so airborne Rangers working with Delta Force and Special Forces. You know, the other thing the Army has is the 160th. This is the aviation unit that takes special operatives to the objective and back. So we now have a Special Forces version of helicopter pilots and mechanics and people that arm them that are all at, you know, an extremely elusive and special unit. It's just crazy that there's so many people involved in things like this. One thing that I want to point out is that the canine handlers, you know, we heard a lot about this during Abu Ghraib when there was this tendency to use these dogs in a way that were, you know, it was really quite frankly, it was disgusting the way some of these people were exploited. But again, it's the use of a canine to make people really stressed out. And that goes a long way to, sort of ending a situation. You're talking about a standoff. You bring a dog involved, whether they bark or they run. It ends things quickly. And again, you know, this dog got injured because of the detonation. We don't know whether or not, this guy, Baghdadi, brought down those kids. You know, did he bring them down to save them? Did he bring them down to essentially, you know, detonate himself? Or was he using those kids, as we've seen in the past, for the dog to basically give up an innocent child, so the dog has something to chase or spend time on? It's disturbing and wicked, but this is exactly the desperation and the selfishness of these terrorist masterminds. They don't care about anyone. Bin Laden hid behind women and had, you know, AK-47s pointed towards his own kids. You know, it's the world you live in as you move constantly, and these people you spend time with, they're just, you know, they're pawns.
You know, David, the al-Baghdadi is out, but the jihadist message is likely to live on. What's the concern now going forward?
Oh, these guys, this is the equivalent of, you know, going up to the big mascot at Burger King and, you know, shooting them. What is that going to do? Hamburgers are being sold the next day. Nothing you do is going to stop. There are people that thought that Bin Laden's son's death, this is, unfortunately, is a sickness and, this idealism, the ideology that, you know, God is telling you to be violent in his name is going to go on for a very, very long time. It's going to take a generation to change where we can all look at each other and say, this is pointless. But unfortunately, you got to get to a point where you acknowledge that it's pointless. And that comes with attrition, that comes with loss. And for whatever reason, we're still going to have ISIS for a very, very long time. We're going to have Al-Qaeda. We'll have all these lunatics until we call them and take them out. That's the way to pacify terrorists, is sometimes to take them out of circulation.
The president was watching this unfold yesterday with the vice president, secretary of defense, and some others inside of a room. He was later asked, was he watching on video, something else? He said he didn't want to say, but Basically, it was like a movie, is what he said. What is the technology like for the president and others to be able to watch this unfold live?
You know, I think we all have that technology now. I mean, you know, you think about in the old days when you did an interview. Now there's like an app on your phone that sets you up so that the sound is almost crystal clear. Like there are people that are recording and doing radio that sound like they're in a studio, but they're thousands of miles away from each other. We kind of had that in our industry, and the military, of course, leads the way when it comes to that stuff. But it's the equivalent of having the cameras that the police officers have. These are probably, you know, just next level 4K, ultra high definition. So you're getting crisp images. You know, the Bin Laden raid was pretty spot on as far as like the ability for people to see what was happening in real time. There wasn't a whole lot that the Obama administration didn't see live in person with the Bin Laden raid. Well, it's been that many years later. You've got all the opportunity. The other thing too is understand you almost have aerial points of view from the different drones and the different planes, and you literally have someone who's cutting these images for the president in real time, like a film, like a director is, you know, on a television show going, give me camera one, give me camera two. They're doing all of that to paint the picture for command. And by the way, allowing the commanders to see that battle unfold like that ultimately saves lives, because now they can make real decisions, life and death decisions, with a ton of information, and hopefully take the enemy out and bring us home and save you know, friendly lives. And for that many explosives to go off, for a guy to detonate a vest at a compound with that many people and that many rounds fired at that elevation of helicopter, for no American servicemen to be even wounded, that's pretty crazy. Even in the Bin Laden raid, there was a hiccup. We lost a helicopter, a very serious situation where a piece of technology that honestly ended up in Chinese hands, that technology that we lost in that Bin Laden raid became, you know, now could potentially be used against us. This is pretty impressive for nothing to go wrong. It just shows how professional these men and women are.
That's 930 in 716. We're back tomorrow with another edition from the studios of WBEN Buffalo.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.